We're facing an offense this week that had an explosive performance last week, and it came through the rushing attack. It came through the quarterback. It came through big plays. And so they're getting themselves together at a good time for them, and we're going to have to make sure that we exceed their tempo. We exceed their tempo in terms of pacing, in terms of what we need to do to get ourselves lined up and get set and to execute. And we're excited about the challenge. It's great to be here in this particular game, and we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to the environment.
Bears defensive coordinator Eric Washington talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars, that offense. Trevor Lawrence having a game, 371 yards last week, two TDs, a 119.5 passer rating, and Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby, one of the greatest football names ever, Tank Bigsby. Jags rushing game, and it looks like they're going to terrorize the Bears. That's the way Eric Washington sounds. Let's find out. Let's go to the co-host of Jaguars Today. We're going to visit with Tony Smith on the guest hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Tony Smith, co-host of Jaguars Today from 10 to 12 on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM Jacksonville Sports Network. And I think the question is, how fat are you, Fat Tony?
You know, I get that a lot, right? Like, that's the handle I have there on Twitter. That's a nickname that was given to me by my broadcast partner, Mike Dempsey, years ago when we started working together. And he gave me the name because my mother's maiden name is Ginsani, so I have the Italian roots. Right. But I look Italian, but I got the last name Smith. That's the family name now. And my dad was like, you got to be in witness protection or something. And he started calling me Fat Tony. I'm not a big guy, but, you know, you don't nickname yourself and some things just stick. So I go around as Fat Tony on the radio. Yeah.
Yep, congratulations. It certainly gets our attention. And we want to talk to a guy named Fat Tony. So no Eric doubt. Washington. Now, coaches do this. Coaches always, maybe they make up stuff, they have straw men, but it seems to be a true thing with the Jaguars. Looking at that offense, there's the number one overall pick, sometimes actually looking and playing like a number one overall pick in a running game that can then do some damage, and leading the league in 50 yard plus plays. And what is, you're talking to Bears fans, what should they be worried about for real?
This has been a Jaguars football team that has had the city for the first month really frustrated, right? Because they were 0-4, but they had opportunities, real opportunities, probably should have won at least two of those games and dropped them. The Buffalo game is a bit of an exception. Buffalo just blew the brakes off of them, right, on that Monday night game. But the other three games they could have won, two of them they definitely should have won. The entire time while that was going on, they were making big plays every week. It was happening. And then a couple weeks ago against Houston, Trevor Lawrence, who was fantastic last weekend against Indianapolis, the week before against Houston, if the Jaguars had made one of three plays on offense, they beat Houston that day. It really was as simple as that. It was one of three plays that were wide open to be made. If they made one of those plays, they beat Houston that day. And there's a different feeling for everything, you know, at 2-3 as compared to 1-4 as they get ready for this trip to London. So I do think from the outside looking at it, if you see a team that looks like it could potentially be dangerous, I think that's because they are. And a lot of that has to do with the development already of rookie wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. and what he can do to take the top off of defenses that he's already shown to this point in his early career. And you also have a backfield that we weren't sure after how much Tank Bigsby struggled last year as a running back for the Jaguars as a rookie, what exactly year two was going to look like. But right now, because of some different things that are going on in the backfield, there's a lot of fans that are kind of pushing for Tank to be more the featured guy right now. Etienne's dealing with a bit of a shoulder injury, which has slowed him down the last couple of weeks. But everyone's very comfortable with the Jags throwing a 1-2 punch out there at running back. And obviously coming off a week like the passing game did last week, there's a lot of confidence in that group going into this game in London.
We're talking with Tony Smith. He's on Twitter at, or X, whatever you want to call it, at 1010XL Fat Tony. We love Fat Tony. So if you are looking at, you know the Jaguars offense. Tony mm-hmm. Smith, of course, is a co-host of Jaguars Today. That's why we're talking to him. Bears, Jaguars tomorrow. So you're looking at a Bears defense with the Jaguars offense. The Bears defense has holes in the secondary. Brisker's out. They have injuries, and they brought up guys from the practice squad who are going to have to be subs, and they hope that their backups can play well now. So the passing game gets it done quicker. The running game can destroy a team and keep a horrible defense off the field. What do you think is the way the Jaguars are going to attack the Bears?
I thought all week before, you know, there were the hints of what was going to happen with the Bears secondary this week.
Right.
Because I look at that Bears team and that group in the defensive backfield is among the handful of the best in the league when they're all together, right? And they've shown that to this point this year. But with the injuries they were dealing with, early this week I was thinking, is this the week for the Jaguars to say, you know what, I know we're way more comfortable throwing the ball than we are running the ball typically as the game plan, right? They're very comfortable in that situation on offense, but given the matchup against the Bears, because of how good the secondary appeared to be for Chicago, I thought maybe they'd be willing to switch it up a little bit this week and go more with the run game, which has been largely successful to this point this year, but not in all areas. Third and fourth and short has been a problem for the Jaguars now for 4 years, and it still hasn't been fixed. They're still a little shaky when they get in those kind of situations, which obviously those are critical situations in a game. So we'll see if they can get some of that kind of stuff cleaned up. But I thought all week they might lean more towards the run game. But I do think the late in the week news with the guys that aren't going to be available for the Bears may put the Jags in a much more comfortable position of trying to do what they typically do, which is run to set up or pass to set up the run. And I think in that situation, it does create the opportunity for the Jaguars to be more comfortable on offense as far as play calling than I thought they might have needed to be to give them their best chance to win this game. We'll see, you know, if how much of whatever game plan they put in early this week affects what they actually wind up doing tomorrow in this game. But my guess is we're going to see what we typically see from the Jaguars. The things that the Colts do, because of the way the Colts play defense, they dare you to throw it short and take the short stuff. Well, last week for Trevor Lawrence, that's exactly what he needed. He just needed a defense that was going to let him make some plays early and get into a rhythm. I have a feeling with all the issues that Chicago's dealing with right now in the secondary that it could be similar in that regard tomorrow in this game. And obviously from a Jaguars perspective, the A number one thing they need to do is get Trevor Lawrence comfortable, because he's a really, really good player. But they've had to rely too much on him at times this year because of the issues they have on defense. So we'll see if they're going to be able to control what they want to do in this game against Chicago. But I do think the injury report from that perspective really helps the Jags in this game.
Tony Smith is my guest, co-host of Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM Jacksonville Sports Radio. We're talking Bears-Jaguars here on The Score. They play tomorrow. Caleb Williams is in a position, his arrow's pointing up, last couple games. You've beaten teams that are begging to be beaten. This is an awful Jaguars defense that looks like it's begging to have 400 yards put on it. Could happen, right?
It certainly could happen. We'll see. They had so many issues late in that game. If you look at the first three quarters of that game against the Colts last week, you probably wouldn't feel that way, but the fourth quarter happened, right? You can't ignore those things. When the Jags at one point had a 17-point lead and the Colts were able to come back and still get it tied, and a lot of that was the Colts had nothing going for basically the first three quarters of the game. Nothing going. And then in the fourth quarter, I was watching it going, well, they got to open it up at some point. And they had like a 12 or 13 play drive, and they scored a touchdown on it on kind of a miracle answer touchdown pass to a tight end to get him within 10, you know, at that point. And, you know, I'm watching the game going, well, the Colts can't do that again. There's not enough time for them to do that again. Just take away the deep ball. Well, the Jags didn't take away the deep ball. And certainly the matchups, you know, going up against Chicago, the Colts aren't going to be throwing out there a wide receiver with the Bears will be throwing out there tomorrow, right? The Bears are way more threatening from that perspective. How much of that do you get cleaned up in a week? I don't know, but that hasn't been a weekly over and over and over again issue to this point for the Jaguars. It pops up every now and then. It popped up in week one against Miami, but that's Waddle and Hill. That happens, right, against those guys. They're able to get past every defense in the league when Tua is healthy. They're able to get past every defense in the league. They did against the Jags. The Colts being able to do it is like, what are we doing? Right? They don't have anybody that you would feel would threaten them that way. So whatever adjustments they're going to make, it does. It's the matchup in this game, I'm with you, that from a Jaguars perspective would be the one that's like, we got to figure something out now.
One of the things,
because you can't just let ask you.
One of the things that has shown its head with Caleb Williams and his improvement is he's had his complete set of weapons that you've got Kmet as your starting tight end, one of the best in the league. And then right. DeAndre Swift has looked to run north and south and not dancing all over the place. Plus, Keenan Allen got healthy. So Keenan Allen, yeah, in addition to DJ Moore and Rome Odunze, and somebody's had a breakthrough, a breakout game, because the other team allowed it to happen and the Bears focused on that. Who's the guy likely to get single covered? Who's the guy, if you had to pick one Bears weapon to have that breakout game, who would it be?
I think if for me, from the outside looking in, just because of, you know, what I know about each of these players, I would say DJ Moore is certainly the most talented and accomplished of that group, right? Like, that would be the guy. If I'm the Jags, I'm kind of circling going, this is the one we got to take care of. Now, as you know, that dictates the matchups in these other spots with the Odunze and Allen. It means, you know, you're going to double somebody in all likelihood. The most likely guy I would think would be DJ. In this circumstance, but all of them are capable of being doubled. So if I had to pick one, I would say DJ is the one that frightens me the most of those three guys. But, you know, a lot of how much impact those guys are going to have in the game are dependent upon the flow of the game. You know, last week against Carolina, the Bears could do whatever they wanted. That's a really bad Panthers defense. Mm-hmm. You get DJ Moore involved early. You don't need Keenan Allen to be the, hey, go get us the 3rd and 5 guy. You know, this may be the week where that's more of what the Bears need, is to figure out a way to convert 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, 2 or 3 times, and that could be the difference in a game. In a game that I expect to be as tight as this one will be tomorrow. So it's about the kind of matchups within the game, but going into it, I would say DJ Moore would be the guy that I would have at the top of the list, at least for me.
So Trevor Lawrence is a guy who was picked number one overall. We have that in Chicago in Caleb Williams. Are there lessons that Trevor Lawrence has learned that Bears fans might imagine or hope that Caleb Williams avoids? What are the landmines?
The landmine would be Urban Meyer being your coach in the rookie year.
That's not going to happen. The Bears could never get him out of the Columbus bars.
No, yeah, that was an experience there. Trevor Lawrence's rookie year. I will say from that perspective, I don't think Trevor could be any better with the way that he handled all the chaos around him in that rookie year. Obviously led the Jags to the playoffs there in year two. And, you know, the back half of last season happened the way it happened. And the front quarter of this season happened the way it happened. So, you know, we've had all our long and hard conversations about Trevor Lawrence. He got the contract extension this offseason. I think the quarterback position is so different than any other position on the field, right? Because these guys have to be the mouthpiece for the whole team. They're the only player that's going in front of the entire media every week. You know, the locker room opens up and everyone gets to talk to everybody that's in the room, but it's different with a quarterback. So you need somebody that can be steady when things are not steady, right? And up there in Chicago, obviously Caleb, they've done pretty well to this point. I know in the preseason picks, I had Chicago as one of my NFC wild cards. Like, I do. I really like this Bears team, and there's a lot of reasons to like this Bears team. So Caleb couldn't have landed in any better a spot as the number one pick in a draft than I think he did. Historically, I think he's in as good a spot as any number one overall pick has ever been put in with the roster that he's going to be surrounded by. So it's hard to exactly talk about the lessons you can learn from Trevor, because Trevor was coming to a team that was so bad that year under Urban that they got the number one pick again, right? Like, that's where the roster was that year, and they go get Trayvon Walker after his rookie year too. But I wasn't surprised that things were going to be that bad for Trevor Lawrence during his rookie year. He didn't have any of that experience when he was at Clemson, right? So there are those kind of lessons that you have to learn, but I think whatever those lessons were from a we don't win every week kind of thing probably happened to Caleb the last couple of years at USC too. It's not like that was a team that was competing directly for a national championship every time that he walked on the field. He was competing for a Heisman Trophy, you know, for the last couple of years, but that's a bit different than the team expectation stuff. It does feel like Caleb is a guy I know, and this is all for me from this far away, watching Caleb, and people react to all like the on-field stuff and reacting to people on the, I'm like, shut up about all that. None of that matters. Like, does the locker room like him? That's the only thing that matters. And every time I see any of the Bears players talking about him, they seem to really like him, right? In the way that he plays. And if you have that on your side, and especially if you're five games into your NFL career and you've won three of those five games, no one's got anything negative to say about Caleb Williams at this point. And he's a lot of fun to watch play on top of that. So I would say be you. And I'm sure that's what Trevor would tell him too. Just be you. Whatever that thing is that allowed you to win a Heisman and allowed you to be the number one pick in the draft, that's why Chicago has you. Show it to him every week on the field. Everything else will take care of itself.
Okay, don't say be you again, because be you is what like Matt Nagy had written on his call sheet, and we didn't like his call sheet. So we'll just run you off those words, okay, Tony?
I didn't mean to have the negative callback there. I apologize.
Well, it's the month for getting scared and seeing ghosts, and we're done with that. Tony, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Tony Smith, co-host of Jaguars Today from 10 to 12 on 1010XL, 92.5 FM Jacksonville Sports Radio. On X at 1010XL Fat Tony. We talked to Fat Tony because that's what we do. Hey, listen up. This broadcast note. Tune in tomorrow morning from 7 to 11 for our exclusive coverage of the 46th running of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. Josh Liss and our team of marathon experts will be broadcasting live from the finish line with reports from the lead vehicles and around the course. It can be heard only on 670 and the Score and the Odyssey app. I'll take a break when we come back. The cultural zeitgeist has a spectacular football story about a marathon, a Hall of Famer in a marathon story, and some other stuff, especially food stuff, we need to bring you. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suck at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby. Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe owned the Chiefs.
Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
We do. We're here doing it again. Cultural Zeitgeist on Saturday Suckage. Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. So this first item, the greatest moment in sports history might get some more medals. I don't know why it's happening now, but here's what's happening. A bill was introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives on Tuesday to award congressional gold medals to the 1980 Miracle on Ice Olympic hockey team that defeated the heavily favored Soviet Union in Lake Placid. The Miracle on Ice came during a period of high tension during the Cold War. Congressman Pete Stauber, Republican from Minnesota, introduced the Miracle on Ice Congressional Gold Medal Act. One of his co-sponsors was Illinois Democratic hockey nut Mike Quigley. Indeed. Member of the House from Illinois, Mike Quigley. He's shown up at a lot of hockey things that we've done around here. He's been on the score talking hockey. Stauber said in a phone interview with AP, what they did for our country at that moment, I'll never forget. It was one of the defining moments in my lifetime, and I'm so proud that we can give this congressional medal to each member of the Olympic team. Say thank you for the memories we will never forget as a nation. Yeah, we thought a hockey game, a hockey victory over the evil Soviet Union would, like, free hostages. And it didn't, but it was great. It was the greatest sports moment ever, without question, or the greatest sports moment since the original David and Goliath. That's what it was. And the fact that they're getting congressional gold medals is what he wants to. I don't know why. I don't know when. I know that they're trying to time it so it happens by next February. Next February is the 45th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. Always good. Any chance to talk about it, it's just great. I'm in favor of it. But anyways, greatest sports moment, more medals for it. There you go. Chicago Marathon's tomorrow. I told you that. You can catch it here on The Score at 7 a.m. A texter said, how do you broadcast a marathon? I said, if you're Josh Liss on your call, you broadcast it in award-winning ways. Just tune in at 7 in the morning and listen, and we'll bring you the marathon. The Minneapolis Marathon was run recently, and it included traditional music. Every year, Alan Page, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, former Minnesota Supreme Court Justice, and former Bear, plays his middle school sousaphone to cheer on runners in the Twin Cities Marathon and honor his wife, who died of cancer in 2018. There's video of Page playing his sousaphone while runners pass him. He plays and he waves at the camera. Alan Page is 79. He's a former Golden Domer, a former member of the Vikings' famed Purple People Eaters. Parents, tell your kids. And he played his last four seasons, 1978 through 1981, with the Bears. He averaged 10 sacks a year. He would get Montez Sweat money right now. Alan Page, and that was at the end of his career. He played in all four Viking Super Bowls. They lost all four. He got a JD from the University of Minnesota after leaving Notre Dame. He served as Associate Justice, Minnesota Supreme Court, 1993 until he reached the court's mandatory retirement age of 70 in 2015. Alan Page, the first defensive player in NFL history to win the MVP award. The only other defensive player to do it is Lawrence Taylor. Alan Page, a defensive lineman, a Minnesota Supreme Court justice, and he plays the sousaphone as runners go by him in the marathon. That's what we do here. That's America. Omaha! 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 You know how some people can see something as art while others see it as trash? Some people see trash and call it art. Both of them were true in a Netherlands museum. Here's the story from CNN. A elevator technician at a museum in the Netherlands mistakenly threw away a piece of artwork made to look like two empty beer cans. French artist Alexandre Levet, or Levet, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, said all the good times we spent together. That was the title of his piece. And it looks like it belongs in a trash can because it's two empty beer cans. And one's on its side and one's standing up. But a closer inspection, art geeks will tell you, meticulously hand-painted with acrylics, each detail painstakingly replicated, the Lamb Museum said in a statement. For the artist, the cans symbolize cherished memories shared with dear friends. I could see that. Okay, so that's his art. Meanwhile, there was a worker in the museum who was covering for the regular technician, so he was a sub, much like the Bears need subs in the defensive backs. So he saw beer cans around. They were displayed in a glass lift shaft, an elevator shaft, as though they were left behind by construction workers. So what is a guy who is the regular technician who is supposed to clean up, what is he supposed to think? Yeah, it's trash. We got to throw this away. This is not the right for the museum. The artwork's placement was part of the museum's trademark of displaying places or pieces in what it calls, quote, unconventional locations, end quote. The theme of our collection, said Siski Van Zanten, the museum director, the theme of our collection is food and consumption. Oops. The museum underlined it bears no ill will towards the technician. He was just doing his job in good faith. The cans were recovered, you'll be happy to know, you art nerds. They were recovered, they're both still intact. They were cleaned and then displayed on a traditional plinth at the museum's entrance, according to the statement. So it now gets the spotlight of art as trash, looking like trash and treated like trash, now getting treated like art. Such is the subjectiveness of art. There's a Twitter account called Flargo that tweeted out, I respect the Virginia is for lovers, but we need a state for haters. To which the New Jersey governor's office tweeted, you called? That's New Jersey having great self-awareness. But the at NJGov account, the New Jersey governor, is a stitch. I mean, the governor is the guy who spoke at a college. I'd never heard of him. And he was pretty certain that none of the New Jersey students at this New Jersey college knew who he was. But he also told them he was the one to thank. I think we did this on the Wake and Bake Club during commencement exercises. Because he was the one who legalized pot in New Jersey. And college students all got that part of the joke. Another wonderful feed is the National Park Service. I've talked about it before. I think it's great. It's got a wonderful sense of humor. So this week came news because it was Fat Bear Week. Earlier we just had Fat Tony on talking about the Jaguars. And this was, you may not have known it, but it was Fat Bear Week. They've done this for a while now. 128 Grazer was crowned winner of Fat Bear Week. It's the Fat Bear Champ. You could have voted for your Fat Bear at Katmai NPS, National Park Service. It's up in Alaska. And Fat Bears were were bracketed, and you looked at pictures and you chose which one was the fat bear and you voted on it. And there it is for the second year in a row, 128 Grazer. I have no idea if my friends at the Fat I'm Fat podcast, if Jay Zawoski and Rick Camp cover this and how they vote on this, but you know, there's a lot of fat going on. Fat Bear Week is something that's a role model, something to aspire to. Bears. This would be something to run by Rick and Jay. Because bears, fat equals survival, right? They enter their den and they won't eat or drink until the spring. So they hibernate and they need to be well fed. They need to be fat. They may lose up to one third of their body weight as they rely on fat reserves. I don't know that the I'm Fat podcast would approve of that at all. Could you imagine spending all winter, like not going to Big Ed's barbecue in Waukegan for burnt ends? Me as the greatest burnt ends influencer, the number one burnt end influencer in the United States, I couldn't imagine not going to Big Ed's. I mean, the bears live a good life. Sure, yeah, you go hibernate. Burnt ends are God's food. Big Ed's Bernanza are nearer my God's food to thee. That's the way you have to look at it. By the way, as I talked about Twitter accounts I love and funny responses and things, you should go to Instagram and you should follow Big Ed's Barbecue. It's Big Ed's LLC. That's the account listing on Instagram. He's putting out professional videos. I go, wait, guy runs a barbecue place. Great burnt ends, great smoked brisket, great smoked turkey. Well, he gets professional videos put together because, like, I talk about Big Ed's on the air because I love it. A friend of his loves his stuff and says, hey, I do video. Should we do some video for you? They do professional videos. So there's one that's up. It was recently. I don't know if it would be first in line, but it's still up. A video of a news conference because they're moving into a new place. So it has all the sounds. People asking questions of Big Ed's, like moving to a new place and the place is going to have it. And it just mocks the whole idea of members of the media asking questions. Are you going to have parties there? You know, we're just doing a barbecue. I've told you people, we run a barbecue restaurant. You come in and you order and you eat your barbecue. Well, the old place was a strip joint. Will there be strippers? It's a great video. It's a wonderful video. Speaking of food, and I love talking about food, I have a food tip. Maybe you use this too. What do you think of it? Tyler, let me run this by you. It's a strategy. And this could be handy if you go to Wolves games, the Wolves open the season tonight, Allstate Arena. And if you go around the corner, there's off lawn is the Target. And down in that part of that strip is a restaurant called Little Angelo's. It's at the other end. Little Angelo's Italian. And I went there the other day. And here's my plan when I go to Italian. I did it at Little Angelo's. Order a beef and giardiniera pizza. You know why, Tyler? Think about it. Come on, work with me on this. Why? Because it's a twofer. What happens is you get to taste the pizza, right? The crust, sauce, the ingredients. But because you ordered beef and giardiniera, you also get to see, get a taste, get an idea of what their beef would taste like. It's beef and giardiniera. So it's a twofer if you want to go sandwich next time. And taking it to a third level. This is third level thinking. Sausage. Sausage. Put sausage on it. Then you get the pizza. But you also get the beef and giardiniera combo. You get it with the sausage. Do you do that? Do you ever think about that?
Never have thought about it, but sounds delicious.
Isn't this a great strategy? Isn't it a good thing I'm so smart?
Sounds very delicious.
All right, so I like the beef and giardiniera pizzas at Little Angelo's. Go there and say hi to Angelo. He's the son of one of the founders of Sabatino's, if you remember that. And say hi to Mel and say hi to Sarah. And then see if my strategy works for you. I'm Steve Rosenblum. That's our cultural zeitgeist. When we come back, kind of talk some baseball stuff. We'll jam it all together and do it before we get out of here at 2 o'clock. Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
When the season started, USA Today printed a list of team payrolls. Top three payrolls, Mets, Yankees, Dodgers. That's three quarters of your LCS. The other quarter, two teams in the 20s playing now, Detroit and Cleveland. Stars win, money wins. Notice that nobody who spent $8 million on a manager is in the LCS. Just thought I'd point that out. A manager who didn't make them better, by the way. Same record as the guy they got rid of to bring in this manager they spent $8 million on. Tom Ricketts sent a letter to the fans. It's unacceptable. We failed. Blather, rinse, repeat. Rick has also talked to Megan Montemurro of the Tribune. Most noteworthy was addressing Jed Hoyer. He's got a contract. That's Ricketts' stance. He's got a contract, 1 year left. And by golly, they're going to make him earn it, as it should be. I mean, at some point, it seems unavoidable. At some point, Tom Ricketts has to ask himself the same question I asked as soon as Theo Epstein resigned. What has Jed Hoyer won without Theo? Now, Hoyer was in Boston in 2004. Red Sox broke the curse. And he was in Chicago in 2016 when the Cubs broke the longest stretch of loserdom in sports history. Both times it was Theo, and Jed was the underling. And in between, Jed was in San Diego and not having much success, not winning without Theo. That's what it was. Theo was Harry Potter. Jed was Ron Weasley. So when Theo resigned and hoped his $10 million would go for signing an impact player, question again was, what had Jed won without Theo? It's a fair question. You look what happened in San Diego. He traded for Anthony Rizzo. That's sort of a rite of passage with him, and it worked out well here. Rizzo was captain of the team that won the World Series when Theo was in charge. It was also fair to think that Jed improved his GM chops since soloing in San Diego. In Boston, Theo was a wunderkind. In Chicago, it seemed like he was a man in full, or certainly middle-aged in full. So maybe osmosis was Jed's friend. Unfortunately, the question still stands, and it seems like Tom Ricketts is asking himself that. What has Jed won without Theo? Jed takes over for Theo. He signs another contract in 2020. It runs through next year. From 2018 to the present, taking over after Theo, 7 seasons. The Cubs have made the postseason twice. They've yet to win a game. They lost to the Rockies in a 1-game wild card, and they were swept by the Marlins in a 3-game series. All 3 games at Wrigley, 0 wins for Hoyer's Cubs. Hoyer has not made his teams have not made the postseason since 2020. 4 seasons without postseason baseball that Ricketts calls the most exciting month of the year. So maybe Jed couldn't win when the 2016 heroes started to fade, and Ricketts, I don't know, maybe their money issues beset Jed in the budget, and things got wonky, and Marquis wasn't delivering the wheelbarrows full of money that Crane Kenny said. But still, these are Jed's decisions. And I don't know who quit on the 2021 season when they got rid of Yu Darvish. But it seems that whatever the reason, when you're the boss, when you're Tom Ricketts, you eventually have to ask yourself, what has Jed won without Theo? It'll keep getting asked, probably all year next year. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage, an epic produced by Tyler Farengel. If nobody important listened, I'll be back next week. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And then you'll have to eat your lunch all by yourself.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.